time for It Says in the Papers, again from Caroline Murphy.
Enda Kenny makes news today as his calls or plans in three completely different areas make the lead in three papers. The Irish Independent goes with what it says he intends to do for first-time housebuyers. Hope for first-time housebuyers as 10% deposits to return is the headline, with the line underneath explaining Kenny plans scheme to bypass central bank stricter home loan rules. We're told the government is now planning to get around them through a new insurance scheme. Under plans that are still to be teased out, a portion of any new home loan to first-time buyers will be guaranteed by the state. It's based, we're told, on schemes in Canada, Finland and the UK. The Irish Times, meanwhile, leads with what he will call for from the EU. Kenny presses EU leaders for climate deal concessions is the headline there. We're told that as EU leaders advance a new climate change deal to deal with emissions, the Taoiseach will argue that our dependence on agriculture should be a factor. And the Irish Examiner goes with what he's calling for from Sinn Féin. Kenny Sinn Féin must tell if rapists were sent to South. Sean Connolly says Sinn Féin has been put under intense pressure by the Taoiseach to reveal anything it knows about sex offenders moved across the border to the Republic. The Sinn Féin leader's call to the Taoiseach, meanwhile, makes the second story on the front of the Times, with many of the papers reflecting Mr Kenny's meeting yesterday with Maria Cahill in their front page picture choices. The sub-headline on the Times' second story is Adams challenges Taoiseach to meet four people allegedly involved in Kangaroo Court. In the piece, we're also told that a solicitor representing the people named by Maria Cahill in the Spotlight programme has complained of trial by media and has said that the fallout from it has meant that his client's acquittals have been either ignored or devalued. There's plenty more on the Maria Cahill case elsewhere, of course. In the Mail, Niamh Lyons reports on what she told the Taoiseach under the question, were the IRA sex abusers just moved down south? While underneath, Senan Maloney's analysis piece is headlined, a question lingers, so silence won't do. Editorially, the paper asks, is this the beginning of the end for Adams? And says of his performance in the Dáil yesterday, once again, he proved himself his own worst enemy. The more Mr. Adams tries to explain, the less convincing those explanations become, says the writer, who concludes, there's now a distinct impression that Ms. Cahill's claims are only the tip of a very large and nasty iceberg upon which Mr. Adams' career could ultimately founder. On page 8 of the Times, Stephen Collins writes about the pressure Mr. Adams is under too. The headline there is Cahill leaves Adams and Sinn Féin reeling. While in the Independent, Lise Hand says of his performance in Leinster House, Adams sank in the face of Dáil storm. The high wire upon which he has balanced with ease for the entirety of his political career bucked and yawned beneath him in the teeth of the onrushing storm, she says, and then he lost his footing. Lost, spent or wasted, those are surely questions which will continue to be asked of the taxpayers' money which went to the charity Positive Action. And the revelations made on RTE yesterday get plenty of space today. They're the lead in the Irish Daily Mail. Taxpayer cash paid for drink at seminar on liver health is the aspect that paper picks up on. While the front page piece in The Independent is headlined, Blood Charity spent state funds on dog kennels. In a comment piece inside, Ailish O'Regan goes back, though, to the shocking infection which sparked the setting up of the group, and she writes under the headline, this is a sad end for a group born out of tragedy. But finally this morning, Roscommon's new free man gets attention. The Times reports Chris O'Dowd telling the crowd who gathered to share that freedom that actually I wasn't aware Roscommon had enslaved me. And we're told his acceptance speech was like a love letter to his hometown with a bit of slagging thrown in. He told his fellow Roscommoners, for instance, what we lack in clean water, we make up for in dirty jokes. And he noted that in being made a freeman, he was following in Mary McAleese's footsteps. That, he said, made him feel a little bit like Michael D. Higgins, but not, he reckoned, with the same IQ or the same inside leg measurement.
Caroline, thank you very much indeed.
Time for It Says in the Papers again from Caroline Murphy.
Enda Kenny makes news today as his calls or plans in three completely different areas make the lead in three papers. The Irish Independent goes with what it says he intends to do for first-time housebuyers. Hope for first-time housebuyers as 10% deposits to return is the headline, with the line underneath explaining Kenny plans scheme to bypass central bank's stricter home loan rules. We're told the government is now planning to get around them through a new insurance scheme. Under plans that are still to be teased out, a portion of any new home loan to first-time buyers will be guaranteed by the state. It's based, we're told, on schemes in Canada, Finland and the UK. The Irish Times, meanwhile, leads with what he will call for from the EU. Kenny presses EU leaders for climate deal concessions is the headline there. We're told that as EU leaders advance a new climate change deal to deal with emissions, the Taoiseach will argue that our dependence on agriculture should be a factor. And the Irish Examiner goes with what he's calling for from Sinn Féin. Kenny Sinn Féin must tell if rapists were sent to South. Sean Connolly says Sinn Féin has been put under intense pressure by the Taoiseach to reveal anything it knows about sex offenders moved across the border to the Republic. The Sinn Féin leader's call to the Taoiseach, meanwhile, makes the second story on the front of the Times, with many of the papers reflecting Mr Kenny's meeting yesterday with Maria Cahill in their front page picture choices. The sub-headline on the Times second story is Adams challenges Taoiseach to meet four people allegedly involved in Kangaroo Court. In the piece, we're also told that a solicitor representing the people named by Maria Cahill in the Spotlight programme has complained of trial by media and has said that the fallout from it has meant that his client's acquittals have been either ignored or devalued. There's plenty more on the Maria Cahill case elsewhere, of course. In the Mail, Niamh Lyons reports on what she told the Taoiseach under the question, were the IRA sex abusers just moved down south? While underneath, Senan Maloney's analysis piece is headlined, a question lingers, so silence won't do. Editorially, the paper asks, is this the beginning of the end for Adams? And says of his performance in the Dáil yesterday, once again, he proved himself his own worst enemy. The more Mr. Adams tries to explain, the less convincing those explanations become, says the writer, who concludes, there's now a distinct impression that Ms. Cahill's claims are only the tip of a very large and nasty iceberg upon which Mr. Adams' career could ultimately founder. On page 8 of the Times, Stephen Collins writes about the pressure Mr. Adams is under too. The headline there is Cahill leaves Adams and Sinn Féin reeling. While in the Independent, Lise Hand says of his performance in Leinster House, Adams sank in the face of Dáil storm. The high wire upon which he has balanced with ease for the entirety of his political career bucked and yawned beneath him in the teeth of the onrushing storm, she says, and then he lost his footing. Lost, spent or wasted? Those are surely questions which will continue to be asked of the taxpayers' money which went to the charity Positive Action. And the revelations made on RTE yesterday get plenty of space today. They're the lead in the Irish Daily Mail. Taxpayer cash paid for drink at seminar on liver health is the aspect that paper picks up on. While the front page piece in The Independent is headlined, Blood Charity spent state funds on dog kennels. In a comment piece inside, Eilish O'Regan goes back, though, to the shocking infection which sparked the setting up of the group, and she writes under the headline, this is a sad end for a group born out of tragedy. But finally this morning, Roscommon's new free man gets attention. The Times reports Chris O'Dowd telling the crowd who gathered to share that freedom that actually I wasn't aware Roscommon had enslaved me. And we're told his acceptance speech was like a love letter to his hometown with a bit of slagging thrown in. He told his fellow Roscommoners, for instance, what we lack in clean water, we make up for in dirty jokes. And he noted that in being made a freeman, he was following in Mary McAleese's footsteps. That, he said, made him feel a little bit like Michael D. Higgins, but not, he reckoned, with the same IQ or the same inside leg measurement.
Caroline, thank you very much indeed.
There's a lot of useful information about the rented sector in this report published by the Private Rental Tenancies Board today. For example, one in five households now live in the private rented sector. That's about 300,000 people. 73,000 people are on rent supplement, about 2/3 of all tenants are aged between 18 and 34. About a quarter of people living in the private rented sector are children, and 29% of tenants are non-Irish. But the main conclusion of that report, about which we're going to talk now, is of course its finding that rent control would not be a good idea. As Annette Hughes, the author of the report, told us earlier, rent controls could make things worse by reducing supply and could in fact lead, in her view, to higher rents. We're joined by Threshold's Executive Director, Bob Jordan. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree.
Why not?
I think the evidence in the report doesn't support the conclusions. In fact, no landlord, as part of this research, was asked, would you exit the sector as a result of the introduction of rent control? They were asked, do you intend to exit the sector soon? That's a far different question. I think the other thing is, the report looks at models of other countries that I think most people in Ireland would accept have well-run private rented markets, such as Germany and France. And it draws the conclusion that we've nothing to learn and nothing to gain from looking at what they do and actually implementing some of it. And what we're going to do instead is do nothing and sit around and wait for supply to come on stream. Now, the issue is really at the moment, and Threshold welcomed obviously the announcements in the budget around social housing, is that with the best will in the world, with bulldozers arriving on site today, that supply will not be available for 2 or 3 years. And in the meantime, rents are skyrocketing and tenants need protection.
Right.
What we've been asking for essentially is a form of rent regulation that says that tenants should pay market rent on day one. But because there are so many families living in the private rented sector that need certainty, they need to know that they're going to be living in the same place next year, that their children will be in the same school, that they'll be playing in the same camogie or hurling club, that they need to know the amount of rent that they're going to pay while they're
and
in that tenancy.
Therefore, what control would you advocate?
Well, we would link linking rents to the consumer price index, which is what they've done in Belgium or the Netherlands, or indeed you can base rent increases on the average market rent and maybe cap it at a certain percentage above that. Just to say, Carl, in terms of rent regulation here, rents will continue to rise. What Threshold is against is profiteering, because we have an artificial shortage of rented accommodation. Rents will continue to go up in the private rented market, but at least people will know how much they go up by.
Nobody likes something like profiteering, and we are in a very bad situation with shortage of accommodation, but it's a free country, property has rights, nobody has to rent accommodation to anyone. And therefore, I'm not clear how you can argue against the conclusion that if so many landlords want to get out already and make a profit, if you bring in rent controls, even more will and sell.
Well, I don't think so, because I think the reality is that if rent regulation was in place in Ireland in 2008 and 2009, then landlords wouldn't have experienced the 20 to 30% rent decreases that they had then. I suppose what we're talking about here...
You know the cliche, we are where we are. It's not 2008.
Sure, that's fine. But I think the reality is that the supply of housing has very little to do with regulating rents in the private market. We had the biggest property crash in history. Spending on social housing decreased by 80%.
Yeah, people couldn't afford. The market right now is going crazy. There's money to be made. And if you bring in rent controls in a country with property rights as we have them, as night follows day, can you tell us why what you advocate, which would be nice if it worked, but the likelihood is it wouldn't?
Well, it will work. And the reason it'll work is because people will have protection within their tenancies. Landlords will get market rent at the end of that tenancy. Their rents will still continue to rise. But what's happening at the moment is basically rents are rising to an unaffordable rate. There are 160 families living in hotels in Dublin who've fallen out of the rented sector, including 350 children. We all, as well as having property rights, people also have a right to a home. And what we're saying is rent regulation has been introduced in countries with sensible, modern, private rented markets, and we need it here. We need it now.
Now, there are other things in this report, which I say will be online later in the day. A lot of recommendations, for example, to incentivise reasonable rents, greater notice of rent increases, greater notice to quit, more information about comparable rents in the area, and so on and so on.
Sure.
Is that, insofar as it goes, would you be happy with all that?
Well, the problem with all of those, Carl, is they don't deal head-on with the issue. I mean, giving people more information about the high rent that they're going to pay doesn't deal with the rent level. Giving people 3 months' notice rather than 1 month's notice of the high rent they're going to pay doesn't deal with the rent level. That's what we're saying, that this report misses the point. The point is we have to regulate rent levels because people are becoming homeless.
Do you think you're... I mean, Alan... The Minister for, Alan Kelly, the Minister for Environment, he's only in there a couple of months. Have you any idea what his attitude is?
Well, I think maybe what the Minister needs to reflect on is the fact that this report is already out of date, because the Central Bank has said that it's introducing lending restrictions, which will basically mean that people who thought they were going to get out of the private rented sector and into home ownership will be in the private rented sector for the next decade. And as it stands, they'll be paying higher rents than mortgage repayments, and they can face, you know, exponential increases in the rent because it's not regulated.
Bob Jordan of Threshold, thank you. 826.
Levels of certain cancer-causing pollutants here are significantly above the levels recommended by the World Health Organization. The EPA Senior Inspector, Dr. Ian Marnane, is with us in studio now. Good morning.
Good morning, Audrey.
And thank you for coming in. Where are these pollutants, these particular cancer-causing pollutants that are higher than they should be, where are they coming from?
Well, in these particular pollutants, which are referred to as polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, the main source would be from burning of solid fuels, domestic solid fuel burning.
So it's back to smoky fuel?
Yes, I mean, we've all seen the improvements, I suppose, that we, after the introduction of the smoky coal ban in Dublin, and the levels of pollutants decreased quite significantly. But we still obviously have large parts of the country that are able to burn these smoky coal and wood and peat, and emissions from all of these activities can result in the emissions of these pollutants.
And how high are they? How much higher above the World Health Organization guidelines?
Well, I suppose it varies from year to year, and obviously depending on where we're monitoring. You know, they're well below the European standards. They're slightly above the World Health Organization standards. So from that point of view, and I suppose in comparison to a lot of our European neighbours, you know, the air quality in Ireland is very good. You know, there are areas for improvement, and we see that some areas in the Midlands and some of the smaller towns can actually have poorer air quality than in Dublin over the winter months because of domestic fuel burning. But in general, you know, compared to 20 or 30 years ago, the air quality is good. And specifically, I suppose, in relation to smaller particles, not just these polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, but pollutant levels in general are improving all the time.
In relation to those ones there, the smoky fuel, to give them the more common phrase, people, presumably your advice would be to them to stop buying that and to choose alternatives.
Well, there are, I mean, over the last 5 years, we've had a number of new towns that have taken on the smoky coal ban. That's typically towns with a population of greater than 15,000. But any town or any council across the country can ask the Department of the Environment to actually bring in a ban on these smoky coals. And that's happened actually recently in Wicklow Town, where despite them being below the threshold, they have actually requested and been included within the ban area.
Should there just be a nationwide ban?
Well, that's something that's been considered, and that's something that the EPA would support. And I know the Minister Hogan last year indicated that was the direction that the department were looking to move in. And we've seen the feedback from people living in these towns that have had bans introduced recently is that there is a significant improvement in air quality, and people actually welcome the ban. And obviously this is a choice that people can also make, even in other areas where there isn't a ban in place, that they will choose to use smokeless coal as for their own home heating.
And I'm talking to you on the day that Enda Kenny's off in Brussels asking the European Union to give Ireland special permission, basically special treatment, not to meet their emissions targets over the next 15 years. That's not going to help, is it?
Well, I suppose, they're talking specifically there around emissions of methane. You know,
it's all going into the air, though.
It's all going into the air, and certainly from a climate change point of view, you know, that is significant. But there will also be limits on emissions of other pollutants. So some of those pollutants that we're talking about in our report, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and there'll be emission limits set up until 2030 and beyond. And you know, we're pushing that those would remain fairly stringent from an emission point of view, particularly to protect air quality. Methane, from an air quality point of view or from a public health point of view, is not a short-term pollutant of concern, but it is specifically from a climate change point of view, obviously it is significant.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for coming in, Dr. Ian Marnane from the Environmental Protection Agency Senior Inspector.
Obviously everyone in Kerry would be happy if they got 15 All-Stars. Des Cahill, good morning. How have
good
they
morning
done?
To you. Well, they haven't done badly. The 2014 GAA GPA Football All-Stars named this morning, and Kerry lead the way with 5 after their final success against Donegal. Donegal have 4 awards. The beaten semi-finalists Mayo and Dublin each have 3. With the details, here's our correspondent Brian Carthy.
Good morning, Des. Just the 4 counties represented, 6 first-time recipients, including Kerry's Paul Murphy, Peter Crowley and David Morden. There are also first-time awards for Dublin's James McCarthy and Dermot Connolly, and Mayo's Killeen O'Connor. Paul Flynn of Dublin picks up his 4th award. Kieran Donaghy gets the full forward berth. And the team, goalkeeper Paul Durkin of Donegal, the fullbacks Paul Murphy of Kerry, Neil McGee Donegal and Keith Higgins Mayo. The halfbacks are James McCarthy of Dublin, Peter Crowley of Kerry and Colin Boyle of Mayo. The midfielders, Neil Gallagher, Donegal and David Morden of Kerry. And the half-forwards, Paul Flynn, Dublin, Michael Murphy, Donegal and Dermot Connolly of Dublin. And the full forward line, Killeen O'Connor, Mayo, Kieran Donaghy, Kerry and James O'Donoghue of Kerry.
Thanks a million, Brian. Now then, the other GA story this morning is another blow for Waterford hurling. Stephen Malumphy has announced his retirement from intercounty hurling. He's been one of their star players since 2006. In the Champions League action last night, Real Madrid outclassed Liverpool as they won 3-0 at Anfield. Karim Benzema scored twice, Ronaldo got 1 goal. The other game in the group ended Ludo Goretz 1, Basel 0. So the Spanish side topped the group at 9 points. The 3 other teams are all on 3 points. Now, not for the first time in his career, Mario Balotelli is dominating the headlines for all the wrong reasons this morning following his decision to swap shirts with Pepe at half-time. Brendan Rodgers said he wasn't aware of the decision, but Balotelli didn't appear for the second half. He was subsequently widely and rather brutally condemned for the exchange of shirts, to the point where the Liverpool Echo newspaper is so outraged, their back page carries a picture of Balotelli and Pepe along with the headline "Apologise" and a subheadline that reads, "The Echo says Balotelli must say sorry for half-time shirt swap." Here's what the two managers had to say about the incident. We'll hear from Carlo Ancelotti in a moment, but first Liverpool's Brendan Rodgers.
I think we had an incident last year with a player, and that was something that was dealt with internally, and it's, I'd obviously heard that when I come off the pitch, so it's not something that, you know, I stand for. You know, if you want to do that for me, it's something that you do at the end of the game, and something that I'll deal with.
Sometimes the player change their shirt at the half time with the opponent. I don't see problems.
That's a debate that's going to rage for a couple of days. Elsewhere, Arsenal dramatically scored twice in the last 3 minutes to win 2-1 at Anderlecht.
Deep cross from Chambers. And Gibbs is there to equalise with his left foot. A brilliant finish from the left back. Sanchez drives it across. Podolski is there and scores. And Arsenal, in added time, have changed the game around with 2 goals in no time at all.
It's a little bit a gambling situation that happens in this kind of games, and it worked tonight. It could as well, yes, didn't look obvious, that is for sure. It was disappointing we didn't create more chances tonight than we did, but I put that as well on the fact that Anderlecht defended very well.
In Group A, it finished Atletico Madrid 5, Malmo 0, Olympiacos beat Juventus 1-0, and in Group C, Bayer Leverkusen 2, Zenit 0, Monaco 0, Benfica 0. Tonight, Celtic, Everton and Spurs are in Europa League action. In golf, Peter Lawrie's bid to retain his European Tour card is in trouble in Perth. He's 3 over par after the opening round, 11 shots behind the leader, Australia's John Wade. Kevin Phelan shot level par 72. At the moment, Damien McGrain is 2 under after 11 holes, and Gareth Maben level par after 10. In tennis, Serena Williams was beaten 6-love, 6-2 by Simona Halep in Singapore, her heaviest defeat since 1998. In racing, the action today is in Thurles, beginning at 2:15. And finally, Roy Keane was back in Dublin last night to give his latest take on his autobiography, The Second Half, but this time in front of a big audience at the main hall in the RDS. The event was organised by publishers Eason's, with similar functions in recent days in London and Manchester. Keane was joined on stage by co-author Roddy Doyle for a question and answer session with Hugh Cahill. A reporter, Barry O'Neill, was in attendance to sample Keane's Dublin's public appearance to promote the autobiography.
Manchester United and Ireland jerseys were being proudly sported as fans filed into the main hall of the RDS that was buzzing with an air of anticipation ahead of Keane's most public appearance since the release of the second half. The former Manchester United captain received a rapturous welcome as RTE Sports' Hugh Cahill welcomed the Cork legend to the stage.
Irish sporting legend, ladies and gentlemen, Roy Keane.
Many expected a serious interview, which it was, but what was most memorable was the relaxed, jovial and at times very humorous Roy Keane that appeared on stage.
And the next day they took me around the stadium, as they do, trying to impress me. I think the capacity is 40-odd, and they were actually telling me, we've got planning permission to go to 60. I was like, you're going to League One?
Yeah.
You should be knocking a few stands down. They were like, you're 14 toes. I felt bad because I still had a year left at Celtic. When I rang Gordon, he didn't exactly persuade me to carry on. He's like, yeah, I think it's best for you. I was like, you f***er, you know what I mean? No, I'm definitely coming back now, you know.
There were reflections on his management terms at Sunderland and Ipswich Town, also the controversial moments of his playing career, the Halland tackle, and his tough playing style.
And I said from day one that I would never, ever go to injure a player ever. I've never done it in my career. You know, Troy McClure probably played 600, 700, 800 games. I don't think I've ever gone into a tackle where somebody's gone off on a stretcher. Not that I deserve a pat on the back for that. But did I go to hurt him? Yeah, of course I did. I went to hurt lots of players. That is the part of the game that was one of my strengths, maybe.
However, Keane was quite strong while reflecting on his exit from Old Trafford in November 2005, but his focus was this time on the former number two at the club, Carlos Queiroz.
And, I felt there was a bit of tension there, and Carlos Queiroz wasn't long back at the club after he went off to Real Madrid, so I don't know if he saw me as some sort of bad guy or whatever, or a threat to, I don't know, a threat to one of the coaching staff, I don't know. I think Carlos saw me as some sort of bad guy. Obviously, maybe a powerful influence in the dressing room, which I didn't think there was a case. I just had responsibilities as a senior player, as a captain.
But Keane also turned on Alex Ferguson, stating that he has had to defend himself.
You know, I think I was harshly treated. And I do ask myself, did I step out of line? Did I overstep the mark with whatever issues was going on? And honestly, I don't think I did.
But for the most part, Roy Keane displayed great moments of humour throughout the evening and had this revelation on his infamous bust-up with his former teammate and goalkeeper, Peter Schmeichel.
Self-defence. He attacked me. What do you want me to do? Just take it.
No.
If somebody's waiting for you at the hotel, so I've had enough of you. Let's get it on. You get it on.
Interesting stuff from Roy Keane, and lots more on that on Sunday Sport this weekend.
Welcome back. You're listening to Morning Ireland at 13 and a half minutes to nine. A solicitor representing four people who were acquitted of charges relating to the alleged IRA questioning of Maria Cahill has complained that they have been subjected to trial by media. The solicitor said that all four had been charged but had been acquitted in court, and said that in any normal society that would be the end of the matter and his clients should have been permitted to go back to their normal lives. To comment, we're joined by Sinn Féin TD, Pather Tobin. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
This doesn't solve a lot of the questions about this affair, but what's your comment on it?
Well, the reason I suppose I tweeted yourself, Carl, today was because we've had a lot of debate about this very important issue over the last number of days, but I was surprised that this really important statement made by these individuals through the solicitors wasn't being covered by your show this morning.
It was reported on the 6-1 News yesterday, which is 15 hours ago.
My statement was, like, your show, which has dealt with this issue at least twice every day this week, would not deal with these individuals and their statements with regards to their innocence. And it's very, very important in this case.
It's important to say this. We didn't say anything about their guilt or innocence of anything.
Well, no, the point
and
is...
every program does not have to cover every statement about everything.
Excuse me, Carl. If you want balance, you need to cover both sides of this issue. And the fact is, these individuals made a very strong statement yesterday, which your show refused to indicate.
Not true.
And the point is, as well, is that these individuals were found innocent in a court with regards to the charges that were put to them. They made a statement through their solicitor yesterday, and that simply wasn't covered by your show at all this morning.
There are many other issues that were not covered in this show. As I said, it was covered by a main RTE news bulletin 15 hours ago. Can we talk about what happened to Maria Cahill? Were any of these four individuals involved in the inquiry, as she has alleged, that she was forced to take part in? Or do you know?
I'm not. First of all, I don't know. And second of all, I'm not qualified to make that decision with regards to their innocence. There's been a lot of questions, by yourself included, this week with regards, do you believe certain allegations? And my view on this is very simple, that if a person is to pronounce on that question, they're actually deciding the guilt live on air of four Irish citizens.
That doesn't arise. I want to clarify this question. I will clarify this question, and then you can answer it as you wish.
My question,
if you want to keep talking over me,
you
get nowhere. I am allowed to put a question, and you are allowed to answer. Mr. Thobin, we will get nowhere if you keep talking over me. My question is this: do you know whether those men were in a room having compelled Maria Cahill to appear before several hearings into her allegations, as she has alleged? Do you know? And if you do not know, what is the relevance of what you're saying?
First of all, I don't know if who was in what room. The relevance is what I'm saying is that the only way that this can be got to the bottom of is through the criminal justice system. If you, Cahill, had made, if serious allegations were made against you, would you order that those allegations were decided in a court of law, the media, or the Oireachtas? And every week, every day this week, we have had elected representatives ask, do they believe such and such? We are not qualified to decide. You are asking us to literally be the investigator, to be the prosecutor, to be the judge, and to pass sentence on four Irish citizens. And if we've learned anything from what's happened in the church over the last number of years, we've learned that these issues should not be dealt with within internal organisations.
Mr. Thobin, can I clarify one thing with you?
And they need to be dealt with by the police service and
indeed
the criminal justice system.
Can I clarify?
And anything else is doing injustice to the presumptions of innocence of these individuals.
And we made it clear, and have done so repeatedly, that allegations were made, charges were brought, and those charges were withdrawn. Can I make it clear that we did approach the solicitor who issued the statement on behalf of these four IRA men, and that we got no response from him?
So indeed,
Can I finish the question, please? We wanted to interview the solicitor about a statement he issued on behalf of four members of the Republican movement, and we had no response from him. That was our wish, that was our intention. If it didn't happen, it's not our fault.
But the point that I'm saying to you is, Cahill, is that there are many other people who have been available to speak to yourself on this issue. Indeed, Jennifer McCann, who's an MLA, who was discussed in the original programme from the BBC, who has detailed information into what happened in this scenario.
She was on prime time.
Has been available.
She was on prime time. There's no point in going through a list of people we could talk to, or a list of items.
But can I just get the major point here, Cahill, and it's very important for everybody to understand this. If we want to get to the truth in this matter, and that should be the prime element for everybody's concern, the best way to get to the truth on any such allegation is through the criminal justice system. And what we've seen over the last number of days is the political establishment, I believe, and the media establishment use this element in a very unseemly fashion. I believe we have seen trial by media with regards to Gerry Adams and these four Irish citizens.
You've made that point. We've put questions, and so far they haven't been answered. But Padraig,
I told you, Cahill, that you don't know whether those people were in that room. That you don't have an insight to.
Indeed.
And I also told you that I'm not qualified to make these determinations.
And that's
and I won't come
on
to your show, and I won't say that a person is guilty or not.
Thank you very much, Padraig Thobin. It's 8 minutes to nine.
The Dáil was suspended yesterday amid chaotic scenes which resulted in three independent TDs being ejected from the House over a dispute involving speaking rights for the technical group. Kildare TD Catherine Murphy, Waterford TD John Halligan and Donegal South West Thomas Pringle were ordered to leave from the Dáil chamber after a succession of votes.
For in the interest of democracy and parliamentary democracy, and allow the business of the Dáil to proceed, I ask you please to resume your seat. I'm asking you again to resume your seat. Well then, I'd ask you to leave the House, Deputy. I'd ask you to leave the House. In view of the ongoing behaviour of members of the technical group, I'm afraid I have to suspend the sitting of the Dáil until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Kian Corlia. Sean Barrett suspending the old proceedings. Well, with me now is Thomas Pringle and Independent TD Matty McGrath. Thomas Pringle, what on earth was all that about? As Michael McCarthy of Labour, I beg your pardon, it was an absolute amateurish behaviour by the technical group shutting down parliamentary democracy in this country.
Yes, well, it arises out of the changes that the Cian Corlia has made unilaterally to the who can be is entitled to be a member of the technical group, and we are a group now of 17 members, and potentially could grow to 22 or 23, which would actually be the largest group in opposition in the Dáil. And the within the Houses of the Oireachtas, the political parties are allocated 78 staff to help them administer the workings of their parties, and the technical group do not get any allocation of staff, and we actually come together and pay together to fund staff members to facilitate the workings of our group.
So what's your point? You don't want Matty McGrath, Lucinda Creighton or Peter Matthews in your group unless they stump up the funding for staff?
Well, Matty McGrath is a member of the technical group anyway.
And as is Lucinda Creighton?
No, well, the Cian Corlia has accepted that Lucinda Creighton is a member of the technical group. And we are quite happy that all members who are entitled to join can join the technical group. But we do have to operate a system where we support two staff that are in a job to facilitate the workings and the administration of the group. And unfortunately, members who want to join the group have said that they're not going to do that. They're not willing to support those staff members. So we have taken a decision that we... as the situation is with Matty, is that people who don't support the staff get, if there's speaking time left over or additional speaking time, they will get considered for that, as Matty does.
Matty McGrath, where do you stand on this in relation to Lucinda Creighton, Peter Matthews coming into the group?
First of all, could I just clear up the matter of staff? I have no difficulty with the staff at all, and they do a good job. I never had. I think this is more about the technical group trying to position themselves ideologically. And like, if there's a different group were wanting to come in, there wouldn't be a problem. If there were a more socially to the left of a group, there wouldn't be an issue. The Cian Corlia standing order 120 is quite clear. Anybody who informs the Cian Corlia that he's an independent member or she is automatically in the technical group. Yesterday's charade was a real hijacking of the Dáil, and it was very disappointing from my point of view. And I think the independent brand is suffering. And I hope and pray that it won't happen this morning again, because the Cian Corlia is in an invidious situation. I've contacted him a number of times in the last 15 months. I'm sure Deputy Creed and others, I don't know, maybe have contacted him. But he wrote to me yesterday saying that he was taking this course, that he would give me time if I didn't get it. And he made that clear to the whip. And Deputy Murphy, above anybody, should know. She's a member of the Committee of Procedures and Privileges, and that's the runs the House, really. And if she has an issue, that's where to take it up. Not yesterday, in precious Dáil time, when there were so many issues, the private members, so many pressing issues of the day, and to have a walkout then, when there was no walkout over property tax, over the septic tank charges, over the homeless, over the many, many issues, the disability cuts, there was no walkout. The state just
walked out. That's the point, isn't it, Thomas Pringle? People will look at what happened in the Dáil yesterday and just put their heads in their hands.
Yeah, and none of us decided yesterday morning going into the Dáil that that's what we were going to do. The events took over and took place on it. And I just want to clarify one thing Matty said in relation to who can be members of the technical group. The standing orders actually state that the members who wish to be part of a technical group write as a group to the Cian Corlia, not individually to the Cian Corlia, saying that they're members of the technical group.
People don't care about that. Sort that out outside the Dáil chamber.
Yeah, we have tried for the last 3.5 years to sort this out. We have gone to the Houses of Oireachtas Commission, we have gone to the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, and at every point we have been shot down and pushed back and told that we are not getting any assistance towards staff or resources to facilitate the running of the group and to facilitate the running of the Parliament. Now, if the Cian Corlia is so concerned about fairness and equality, what has he got to say about that situation where the Cian Corlia is the chairperson of the Houses of the Oireachtas Commission and has steadfastly refused to deal with that issue?
Matty McGrath.
Look, the Cian Corlia, as I said, is doing his job to the best he can within the rules. He tells us all the time, change the rules if necessary. Deputy Murphy is the whip of the group. There was never a problem until my problem a year and a half ago when I wasn't saying the things that suited this, what I call a cabal within the group. A lot of fine people in that group have independence of all persuasion.
But Matty chose
That's not true. Look, there's a cabal hijacking the group. They want it for their own purposes. And they don't want want Deputy Creighton and others. Now, I haven't discussed it with her at all because she might take some of the limelight and her views wouldn't be on the same side socially, and that is the problem. But to do this yesterday, it was reckless in the extreme, and the public out there are bewildered. When all the issues, we had the justice people outside the gate with Jimmy Doherty and others, and we had people waiting to meet us yesterday, the carers were up, okay. People up with the Stammering Society of Ireland, all groups wanted to meet us, and the Dáil charade was on and off. It's like turning off the tap for Irish water, and it's lamentable to have this happening, and it's not good for democracy. And
you're not allowed back in anymore, are you, Thomas?
I'm suspended. Yeah, till November 4th.
Okay, we have to leave it
there. The thing that I have to say is that the technical group is a very diverse group, as Matty well knows,
and both
on the right and the left.
Gentlemen, take your debate back out into the Dáil chamber. Thank you both very much indeed, Thomas Pringle, Matty McGrath.